The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, listen.
Breeze crosses your cheek as we appear from the ether, back from seemingly the dead, with stories to tell, mysteries to uncover, and apparently an insurance claim that somebody has to fill out or nobody gets paid. That's right. It's one-upsmanship. Here, with a very special episode, I, Adam Ganser, am joined by my beautiful first mate.
Oh! It was the pause version. I thought it was the version where you were going to say my name, and then I say, ahoy, hoy, Kevin. But it was the version where you pause, and I'm supposed to perfectly interleave like a goddamn barbershop quartet.
Already mutinying.
Which seems impossible, but you do it. When I do it to you, you do it. So I don't know what the fuck is wrong. I'm sorry. Can I tell you something? I was lost in memory because of the phrase cool breeze. I hadn't thought about this in years, but in college... longtime fans may know that I fancy myself a bit of a rapper, which is not okay. Something I'm always proud to announce. But back in college, I knew a freestyler who was very bad, who went by the name The Cool Breeze. His only rhymes ever were like, "The cool breeze will bring you to your knees with ease." That's like all he had up his sleeves, if you know what I mean.
And he retired into the sea from whence he sprang.
That's right. So we're talking comradeship. We're talking unique patois. We're talking Oprah Din.
We're talking Return of the Oprah Din, a game you may not have heard of, but boy, let me tell you, you need to have heard of it. And we're going to tell you about it today because this is a special experience. Also, so glad to hear you did not object to me demoting you from captain.
Oh, to first mate?
You didn't even argue with that. Yeah, you're like, I'm first mate. Sounds good.
I'm a Chris Elliott fan. I consider myself cabin boy.
What a reference.
Underrated.
These pipes are
underrated.
Clean.
They're clean.
Anyway, Mike, do you feel confident enough to educate the young shipheads about the legend of the Oprah Din?
Absolutely.
And its return. Beautiful.
In a segment we call Tell Me Like I'm 8-Bit. So for folks who may not have heard about it, the Oprah Din returns to port sans a living soul. Who is Henry Evans? What is the mysterious blank tome that he left behind for you? The West India Ink Tea Company, I think. The East India, what is it? What do they make? Tea?
Company.
What do they make? The East India Company. What do they
make? I think that's all they're called.
They
I don't think
slavery?
They specifically make tea.
But
probably.
No, I did a Behind the Bastards episode. They're fucked up. It's dark. But anyway,
right.
That's not really delved into in this game. You're an insurance adjuster for the East India Company. And your job is to adjust insurance. No, it's actually to determine the cause of death, basically clue everyone on board the ship. So this ghost ship comes into port and everyone's dead. It's about 60 people. I forget exactly how many. And you are given a ledger that somehow magically, some stuff is not explained, right? It's just the way the game works. The ledger magically knows when you're right or wrong and kind of fills itself in, but it has a series of clues. And what you have is a magic stopwatch called the Memento Mortem that allows you, if you find a body on the ship, to revisit their exact moment of death and relive the sort of their last memories, the last sight they experienced, and also, you know, maybe 30 to 60 seconds of sound leading up to their death. And the ledger provides a transcript and some ways to keep track of your clues, and the clues slowly manifest into gleaning information, not only about who the characters are, what their position was on the ship, where they came from, what their deal was, and what their ultimate fate was, whether they died, escaped, blah, blah, blah. But these all weave together into almost a Deadwood-like, if you're familiar with that show, like story of a community, right? The broader story of the journey of the Obra Dinn and what befell this doomed voyage. To top it all off, it was written, designed, coded, and scored by one person, Lucas Pope.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Is done in a very striking retro style, which is not pixel or not.
It's 1 bit.
It's not 8 bit.
It's 1 bit.
It's 1 bit, which means every pixel on screen can only be black or white or blue and black or red and black. There's a few options, but basically you only get to paint with one color on a black canvas, and yet it's strikingly beautiful. And that's the return of the Obra Dinn.
Absolutely. Well summarized, sir. Now go down below for some hard tech while we pass a checkpoint and begin the rant.
That's what he calls his wiener.
That's right. I do call it that. The old hard tech. Hey, so you want me to go first, by the way? Is that cool?
Oh, yeah. Go first? I'll need some time to work my way through this thing.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for the inadvertent compliment. Player one, Adam Ganser, plugging in and staying focused on my task.
Good luck.
As a good captain should. Hey, I love this game. I love this game. I'm talking about no game has ever gone from I don't want to play this to this is one of my favorite games faster than this game did. It is such a thrill. It is a purely detective game. Like, there's no action sequences. There's no jumping. There's no tools. It's literally just you and your brain figuring out how to figure out who everybody was and what happened to each of the people on the ship, just like he described. I don't think it's perfect, but man, there are some fun mechanics here that I think are absolutely innovative, should be in more games. It made me wish this genre of sort of like legit detective stuff, that it was more robust. There's not that many of these. And I think this game proves that this whole genre is ready to be innovated. And boy, I hope this guy does that. I hope they give him a lot of money. I hope he makes a lot more of these sort of puzzle detective games. I will play every single one. I loved this game. So here's some things I think are great about it. One is I think the story is really cool. I think having this sort of fractured look at the supernatural events that took place on this voyage is both surprising and terrifying. So it gives you the thing that all sea voyages have in your own mythical mind, right? Which is the sort of the dealing with the ancients and the fear of the sea overwhelming the ship, and you're just a little cog in the machine, so to speak. That feeling is all throughout the memories that you get on the ship, and it's really cool, and it's captured perfectly one moment at a time. So that part's awesome. The puzzles themselves are really awesome. And guys, we are going to spoil this game. I know that's every one of our podcasts. We're going to spoil the game, but this one, we're going to have to spoil some of the puzzles and also some of the story to talk about it. So just be aware of that. This game's probably, I don't know, $10 on Steam, I'm guessing. So if you haven't played it, pick it up. It's really great. There are some really clever, devices that helped us figure out who's who, And there was just enough information in the ledger and in the names list and stuff that you could use deduction to figure out people, who people were by abstraction, which was cool because that rewards totally different levels of puzzling than a lot of puzzle games do, right? So like a lot of puzzle games, like I'll take a Legend of Zelda, for instance. The solution is, oh, you got to find the object and use the object at this in this place in this way, and then it works, right? Whereas you're using a different kind of logic to solve puzzles in this game. Like one is like, okay, so it's clearly this guy, he's wearing this hat. Oh, he's this guy, right? But then I might have to notice what race is he, right? Sometimes I'm going to have to use his race to figure it out. Sometimes I'm going to have to use things like, where is he standing in this portrait? Sometimes it's like, what tattoos is he using, right? Or who does he call sir? Or where does he sleep? Or what number is he on the ledger?
Yeah, there's
stuff
one
like
that's
that.
Like, he calls him sir, but he calls him sir, so he's a midshipman.
Yes. So he's a midshipman, okay. Exactly. So there's so much, like, you have, like, all the details matter. It's not laid out for you in this, like, in a cookie cutter helping you out way, but you have exactly the right tools necessary to solve the puzzles. Like, I just think this is a really well structured game. I have my gripes with it. One gripe is I think you should be able to revisit bodies without having to actually go to them. I think once you see the memory, you should be able to flip back through the memory and see it whenever you want. And I thought, so there was a little bit of tedium using the tools. I thought the tools could have been easier to interact with. Especially when you start bookmarking memories and you need to see where is this guy appearing in all these different memories. Like, I'm trying to figure out who this guy is. Where is he in all these memories? And then you have to actually physically go to where they all happen on the ship, and that's very tedious. So little things like that are like quality of life changes that would improve it, I think. But it is absolutely fun. If you've ever wanted to be like a Sherlock Holmes type person, this is the best game for that ever. And one other thing that it does that I've never seen a detective game do is, instead of relying on the emotional and the interpersonal pieces of deduction to make you help you get like clues like you would in, say, L.A. Noir, where you're like, okay, I'm reading this guy's face and he seems like a liar, right? There's none of that. It's all pure logic and deduction based on facts, you know.
Or Sherlock Holmes, where it's almost always, oh, they said this. That contradicts what they said earlier.
Yes, I caught him in a lie.
You should have remembered
that. Like the way cops
that.
Do. Yeah. The way cop detectives would solve stuff. This is very much a cold case thing where there's no hot emotions in it, and that's really cool. Like that was very rewarding in its own way that I did not expect. And that's my rant.
Well, spoken like a person who has never played Papers, Please. Truly,
I haven't played it.
I have
yeah.
to say. When I played them in the other order, so I played Papers, Please, and I thought, they need to give this man a bunch of money so he can just make more games like Papers, Please. This is such an artistically and interactively interesting idea. It needs to be iterated upon ad nauseum by this artist. Then I played Oprah Din, and I'm like, he should just do whatever he wants. Like,
interesting.
If his attention changes to something else, he should let him do whatever he wants. I'll follow him over there, because Lucas Pope is delivering things I didn't know I was missing out on. And Oprah Din definitely does that for all the reasons Adam described. So I'll just double down and say that I think Lucas Pope is like a once in a generation talent so far. There's only two, but I'm really hopeful. And, it's a dream of mine to get him on this podcast. That would be like a bucket list thing for this podcast. We want to deign you the Pope of indie gaming. And I don't want you to get gobbled up by too big of a developer. I just want your ideas to be writ on whatever canvas you find appropriate. May I fetch you anything, Mr. Pope? anyway, that's my general vibe on this. I agree with your gripe, but I also think, when you take into account that it was a one-person design team, the ease of use is tremendous. Like, it's shocking that there's a sensibly interlinked bookmarking system at all. But I agree with you. It would be even nicer if you didn't have to find their bodies again on the ship, because by the time the bodies have completely hit the floor, as Slipknot would say, there's a lot of them, and you have to retread a lot. But in doing that, it gives you time to think through the clues, et cetera, et cetera. I did think, ultimately, a lot of them, There were a few I looked up because I played this through once myself and didn't look anything up and hard-brained it. And then to cover it for the show, I wanted to play through it again to take notes. So I like sparingly looked up ones when I was like, I don't have time for this just because it's for the show. And I will say there were a lot where they're like, well, you know, doesn't he look like a Mexican?
There are some where
it's a lot of them are just like race, identify them by racially profiling them.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. But by and large, the clues are very, very clever and ingenious and handcrafted. They have that bespoke feel. But what I really can't get over is the overall epic story that it actually tells. When you step back and look at what you've wrought, and what the story actually is, it's so cool. It's like one of the coolest gaming stories ever. And they're including scenes that are so compelling that I want to talk about in the next segment for sure. But scenes that are so compelling that I'll just end my rant by saying, I would adapt this into a miniseries by the Chernobyl guys for HBO over The Last of Us. Not because I think it's I'm not even saying that story better than this story. I'm saying this is a story that is about a full community with a bunch of different interesting endpoints, and it's filled with blank spaces. It's ripe for adaptation, and it's such an evocative world. Whereas The Last of Us, they're just going to shoot a really pretty, basically faithful, I'm confident, adaptation of the game. And the game already is so cinematic that it almost is that already. Those things are so much closer together than like, I want to see an Obra Dinn show on HBO. Wow. That's the end of my rant.
Wow. I really want to talk about that, but I don't want to get too far afield. So I guess I'm going to have to cast my opinion into the sea like a magic shell and hope that nothing evil springs back after the break.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Oi! I've been waiting for 12 to 14 hours for you to solve a goddamn puzzle.
Yeah, there's a guy down below.
There's a guy who's just like chilling, just waiting for you. Yeah,
he's just waiting. I totally agree. Yeah, so let's pass a big time checkpoint getting into Game On. And can we just briefly talk about the narrative world of this place? Because I didn't feel that strongly about the larger world of Obra Dinn. I thought it was kind of a contained, like a sea shanty metaphor type thing.
Well, I really like
worlds. So talk a little bit about that.
I like worlds that leave a lot of blank space for you to fill in yourself, and I'm very game to meet those worlds halfway and fill that stuff in. For example, if you are like me and you're a highly motivated play-by-yourself type of kid, I highly recommend this one-player tabletop RPG I've been diving into called Thousand-Year-Old Vampire. That is basically a series of gamified writing prompts, and you end up with a whole chronicle of your life over 1,000 years as an undying creature, right? And I love stuff like that. I love anything where it's like, We'll just give you the hints. You got to fill it in, though. And I always give those games, as I'm sure people have heard on this podcast before, I give games like that a lot of credit for. I'm like, ooh, I bet the designer was thinking this and this. And Adam will often call me on it and say, like, well, you're doing a lot of the legwork for them. But yeah, that's a cool story you came up with or partially came up with.
I like your writing. I'm a big fan of your writing.
I think I'm doing this with Obra Dinn. And that's what I think makes it a ripe for adaptation. That's what I mean, is that there's more room for adaptation. But you're not necessarily arguing that. We're just talking about the game. And I'll say this. At first, I didn't think it was supernatural beyond the Memento Mortem watch. I assumed, and I don't know why I assumed this, but I just assumed, because, okay, this is the way I want to do this. Can we talk about how good the first few deaths are and how perfectly they set you up to understand what the game is and make you go, this rips, this is awesome. Because
it does start with what seems to be a mutiny story. Right, and, like that's it begins there, and so it really throws you off the scent of what it's going to be about, and therefore is very surprising each step along the way.
And it's the framing, like, because everything is a frozen in time, and it's the idea of you first thing you experience is a headshot directly to your face, and the music is so perfect the way it crescendos with the bam, and you're like, okay, what am I understanding here? This guy shot this guy in the face. So it's the slow accrual of information into something awesome where you're like, okay, and so what? You see the next death, and it's the same guy taking another sucker out with like a bow staff and getting stabbed in the arm at the same time. You're like, okay. And then the third, and you're like,
that's cool.
You're like,
cool,
the guys,
Captain.
But you can see that a guy with a knife is sneaking up behind him.
Yes,
so he's
from
fucked,
top,
right?
From up above, which turns out to be a clue to who he is later on, by the way.
That's right.
Like the fact that he comes from above decks and you're like, oh my God.
Then you go to the fourth death and the captain has disarmed and slit the throat of the guy who's sneaking up on him. And then the fifth death is the captain apologizing to his wife and shooting himself in the head. And you're like, who is this John Wick motherfucker? And how dare these people mutiny against Captain Witterell? He seems awesome.
Agreed.
Everything just explodes from there, and I felt like it was a true topper to then realize, oh, there's krakens and mermaids and shit.
That's the thing, right? Yeah. So then, like, you go through that whole little sequence, which is sort of one chapter of the book, and so just so everybody understands, you're given a ledger that has a couple of pictures, like, of all the people that you're going to use throughout the game to identify who everybody is. And when I say pictures, I mean, like, they're group photos, two of them, basically. And that in a ledger of names, and you're supposed to use those two tools to figure out who everybody is. And so, like, when you watch that first chapter that's basically just the mutiny story, you're like, okay, so this is, like, things went wrong.
So he's the captain. That's all I know.
Yeah, things went wrong, and we're going to learn a little bit about mismanagement of the ship. Maybe the captain is evil, whatever. And then the next fucking death is a giant Cthulhu ripping a man in half. And it's like, oh, fuck. What is going on? It's very exciting. Like, it's a truly thrilling moment because you don't expect it to be there. And then every single death after that is harrowing or surprising in some way or the other. Even just some guy was sick. Even that's like, oh, now they had a plague? What the hell is going on in this game? It's so good. Right? Just the arrangement of events.
Or
thrilling.
It's touching, strangely touching, like, there's a guy who gets burned alive trying to save other people, and you're like,
yeah,
not that kid. He's had such a hard time.
Yeah.
Because you knew stuff about him. And then the deaths are skinned so many different ways. Then there's also ones that are straight up clues, right? Like, a guy falls to his death because he was stowing away in some crates.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then later a guy goes, I should have killed you when you killed my brother. And he goes, I didn't mean to. The crate just slipped. And you're like,
right.
wait, pause.
That so means your brother's that guy.
He's that dude's brother. So there's only two people on the roster with the same last name who are both male, so they're brothers. It's like shit like that that just endlessly makes it fascinating to play.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what's so good is that, like, it's a perfectly tied together little piece of art where, like, every word of it, every sound of it is important to deducing the meaning. Now, and I got to say this, this is why I think it's so perfect. I never had to look any of the solutions up. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have to do that. And I wasn't stumped for very long because the game was good about sort of giving you multiple threads to follow and telling you this one's hard. You don't really know enough yet. So you don't beat your head against the wall. You know, it has kind of a rating system.
It's actually amazing that he was able to cerebrally quantify the difficulty of the various clues. That takes so much savvy about human nature.
Right. And I don't know if he had a system or what. I don't know how he did it. But like, they have a little rating system over each person's identity that's like, you know enough to say who he is, but it's like a 3-star. So
and
you're
the
like,
computer
all right,
will
that's going
to
be hard.
You,
yeah.
You probably don't want to tackle this yet. Don't worry about it. Do you really want to try and figure this person out? And you'll go, I'll wait.
Not yet, probably, right,
computer.
And also, it also rewards a thing that I think is necessary in a game like this, which is trial and error. Like, if you get to a point where you can't solve it, it has a mechanic where once you've identified 3 people correctly, it tells you, yes, those people were correct.
Yeah.
Now they're in typeset. You know who they are. You can move on, right? So, like, it rewards, if you're like one person shy and you're like, I don't know, he could be one of these 3 people, you can just trial and error it, you know, which I didn't have to do much. But, like, I think that's a great mechanic because, you know, you don't want to have to get stuck forever. Like, let me move on. You know, and that was, I think, also well built. Cool. You know, I like that. Make it easier if it needs to be.
My tiny minor gripe.
I'm ready.
I thought the definition of the death MO was sometimes, I was like, well, that was a humanoid creature with frog feet and a spear. I would call that a foreign enemy. No, it's a terrible beast. All right, Lucas. All right.
I agree.
You're pretty much calling everything a terrible beast. I think some of these are foreign enemies, but whatever.
Well, he does I don't know if it's ingenious or evil. He gives you a bunch of options for how people died that you're not going to use.
That you don't use. And you assume you're going to use the whole variety by the end. Yeah,
that's what it is. You assume, and he's smart because he knows in most games, they don't give you clues you don't use.
Yeah.
And so it does give you the effect of exactly what you said of like, well, I can't be another terrible beast. I just saw a terrible beast and it looked totally different.
You'll be looking at the ledger, you'll be like, oh, I wonder when someone's going to get shot by a sniper rifle. And you're like, never is the answer. It's just an option in the book.
Right. Right. It's just there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a thing that could happen. Can I say, like, so there was one particularly evil thread of clues that when I finally realized it, I had to tip my cap. I'm like, that's fucking smart, and I love it. And this will be a big spoiler for a lot of the clues. So if you've gone this far and you're like, I don't feel too spoiled, this one's a big spoiler. So I'm just letting you know. So there's a point in the game where it starts to get harder to identify people. And that's the point where I realized that all the hammocks were numbered with the same number of people, like the same number accorded to the name that was in the ledger. So you could actually identify people based
anyone
on where
who
they
was
slept.
Asleep. Yeah.
Yes. And that's, once you figured that out, there were so many names that started to fall with that one thing. And like the numbers were like very small and obscure, and they seemed like just art decoration. They didn't seem like an important detail. Mm-hmm. But you had to figure that out to beat this game, basically. And so the moment when I did, I was like, oh, that's their name in the ledger. It was huge and such a great moment of like realizing the clue. You know, I love that. I love that. That's the joy of solving puzzles, and I definitely had it there. Right? How long did it take you to figure that out? Did you figure it out immediately?
No. In my initial playthrough, that took me forever because I just happened to not ever aim the camera in such a way that the tags were really close to my eyes, so to speak. And then I finally did, wandering around one day, and I went, there's a fucking number right there. Right there, you fucking idiot.
Yep.
There's a number.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm like,
Can't be there by accident. I knew it meant something.
And that only took me a few minutes to figure it out. Yeah.
That's why. So one thing that was like really striking is there's a particular memory that seems very innocuous, right? About one guy dying of sickness.
And you realize, you're sick, drink some water. All right.
Yeah. And what you realize is everybody's in that memory.
And they're mostly in their bunks.
Right. And you're like, why would you do it this way if you're the designer? Why would you have everybody be in it? And that's when you realize, because they want you to realize this one clue, the numbers of the bunks. And it was like, oh, so good. Anyway, I've said it enough. What a great moment.
I just am... So the number of evocative things, and again, I'm lending my imagination to it, but they really invite you to think about these things. It's a huge move. It's a huge flex to me when you realize you can walk on the water. Like some sequences are going to be off the ship. And you're going to see, like, it makes mermaids seem so fucking scary.
Terrifying. Absolutely yeah. terrifying.
And, like, as much as I hated the second officer, because the second officer is a prick all throughout.
He's a real dick.
It's yeah. all his fault. And it's the his ability to add emotional charge to these characters, like I said. Really sorry when the kid died. Think Captain Witterel is so fucking cool. Or really interesting, like an Al Swearengen type character. When he flips out and tries to kill all the mermaids in the hold, like, what a scene.
I feel terrible for the poor Taiwanese officials.
Right, yes, who the Formosans.
Right, that is from Taiwan, right? Aren't they? Isn't that what that means? Or did I get it wrong?
I'm not positive, sir.
Forgive me. I thought that was a synonym.
Let us blunder ahead.
Anyway, yeah, so the Formosan royalty are... Like, they get mistreated, obviously, for racist reasons, and then they get framed for stuff several times that didn't happen, and it's like, I totally believe that would have happened in 1800. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's really clever and subtly done and never overtly stated.
Yeah.
But yeah, this guy's using people's racism to jujitsu his way into stealing stuff.
Which, you know, causes, like, that's part this of the whole story. Horrible chain of events. And even still, my point was, when he dies... It's just from a mermaid, like, pulling him underwater, and I'm like, oh my god, I would wish that upon anyone. Yeah. What's going on down there now? Yes, Republic of Formosa is a short-lived republic that existed on the island of Taiwan in 1895.
Oh, good, I looked it up too. Oh, yeah. I got it right. Okay, great. Nice. That made me happy. Yeah, so that was a cool aspect of the story that doesn't totally come together till the very end, and... the game does reward you if you get every single person right, though it does not require it of you. Like, you can basically right. quit at any time. But basically, once you get everybody right, you leave the ship and then you get, like, the additional information, which is sort of, I guess, what you might call, it's an epilogue, but it's really explaining, like, yes, these people did keep this magic artifact on the ship. Yes, they tried to get it back to port. That's why this was happening. And then they tried to kill it, but it was too late. Like, stuff that you wanted to know
the
for sure.
The Formosans were transporting a relic of great power that they had securely in some kind of magical thing. By trying to steal their shit, the second in command unleashed a curse, and basically all the sea monsters, like, are attracted to, like, fuck whoever has this. This belongs in the sea. We got to go right. get it. So they, in sequence, get attacked by, like, crab people, frog people, mermaids, and the Kraken. And it's just great. It's just delightful.
It's really cool because it has the effect that a lot of those things have in those old stories, which is feeling like you don't understand what motivates them. You know what yeah. I mean? And so for a little while, you just think, what a cursed voyage this is. And then you realize, oh no, everyone in the story thinks that it's being caused by something and they're trying to figure it out. So there must be an answer to it. And then you figure out what the answer to it is. And it's great.
And I love that the shells, when you do finally start seeing them in the flashbacks, the magic shells, even right. when time is frozen, they're animated. They have this aura yes. around them. Really yes. cool detail work.
Yeah.
And Lucas spares most of the women, I noticed.
Yes, he does, but
not
the wife.
Just didn't want to brutally dispatch. No, she gets crushed by falling rigging, I believe.
Yeah, but I think, and early, yeah. and I think that was a really smart move because it offset our feelings, our concerns about the captain one thing about it. And the second thing about it is, it was clear they had sort of a tender relationship, like a sweet and tender relationship. And... you do get little emotional payoffs from the very few details that you're provided by the narrative. Like, there's a guy who died by betrayal, and then when you cut to his picture in the manifest or whatever, he's playing the fiddle, like, and everybody's dancing. Like, he's the guy that's providing the music. You're like, oh, that guy? You stabbed that guy to death?
No, I know.
Sucks.
And Miss Jane Bird...
Yeah,
like, happily dancing in the group photo right. was strangely moving to me.
Yeah,
I was like, she's gonna have such a hard time, man.
Right.
Look at this photo of when they were happy. And
right.
I'm like, wait, these are not people.
That's what's so good about it. Yeah. It's like, there's so much inference, and the designer knows exactly what you will infer from it and plays against it.
It's a masterclass in making the human brain think what you want when you want.
Right. I mean, like, and so this is a thing that every storyteller has to confront, and that is the idea of an image gives you a set of beliefs and feelings, mm-hmm. right? Like sometimes those beliefs are prejudiced, or they prejudice you, and I don't mean that in the negative way. Like they just incline you to believe this and that about this person. And like the fiddle thing is one of those things. You're prejudiced to like the guy because he's providing entertainment and like levity and in this very difficult life.
Yeah.
You know, so then, and then the fact that he gets betrayed is like, not him, you know, like just stuff like that. It's so smart. It's what a director has to know in a film. And I totally see the craft here. And I love
and
it.
And there's a wide variety of crime scenes, essentially. Like there's one that's a classic crime scene where it's so muddled that you're like, okay, someone yelled mutiny. It's the one that involves
right.
Henry Brennan.
Right,
and you're
right,
like,
right.
But so, and then someone stabbed someone who
the
clubbed
one down below.
Someone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who then shot the person in the face who got clubbed, who got stabbed.
Mm-hmm.
Who did what, why? And then you're like, this is a very Sherlock Holmesian one. And then there's other ones where you're like, well, this is just a sad little vignette of a guy dying of illness. They're
right.
very, he finds a way to refresh. Like Arkham, in the Arkham games or a similar analogous game, right? You land and it's basically look until you find the shiny thing, find three shiny things, proceed. He finds so many different ways to skin that puzzle that aren't that, that it gives you faith in the idea of, oh, games can play at this level of, and we recently covered Braid, which I think similarly is like, oh, games can play at this level of engaging my actual me, my brain outside the game is engaged.
So one other, absolutely. Mm-hmm. One other cool aspect of this that it just occurred to me as I was playing it is, so like the way that you encounter these memories is you find the dead body and then your watch does this animation and they have a cool musical intro. And then what you're watching is a moment frozen in time that you were able to three-dimensionally navigate, but you're still limited by the structures that you're like, so you can't walk through walls and stuff. You're not a ghost.
It's a cyberpunk right? 2077 dream jaunt or whatever
yes,
they call it.
It's just like
yeah.
that. Yeah, yeah. Like a yeah, the brain dance. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. just like that. Only more clear. So it's a series of brain dances, which by the way, I like that in cyberpunk, so that
yes,
says
me
something.
Too.
So one cool thing that this guy, like another talent this guy has, is that a lot of times he structured the ship perfectly to allude to the wrong answer. Or maybe the like, or maybe from a certain vantage, the right answer to who killed this person, and therefore who they were. For example, there's a series of deaths that happen in the third deck that start with a guy who crawled all the way back into the in-between space of the deck and then died, leaving a blood trail, and you can't see back into the room. So what it looks like is it looked like somebody shot him through the wall. And you're like, oh my God, so this guy like got murdered by this other guy who's pointing the gun. But you have to find another body, and that's when you realize that in the main deck, there are a series of crazy sea creatures stabbing everybody to death. And this guy was murdered by accident from this guy trying to shoot one of these sea creatures. And so like you actually have to undo any potential suspects you had from this
right.
new vantage point, right? Because this guy understands like, you have to see certain pieces of information to get it all together and obscures it willfully to then later reveal it in a very cinematic way. He's doing it with postcards, basically. And I just love that. You know, I think it's so
yeah.
cool. Anyway, I hope that wasn't too technical. But yeah, man, I was so impressed with that.
No, it's very Pulp Fiction. And it's like we said, there's a reason it goes mutiny, which is the final chapter, because of course it is, because mutiny would come last, because that's sort
right.
of the dissolution of the agreement that binds the crew together.
Right.
Mutiny is presented first because it doesn't involve magic.
That's right.
So Lucas knows that, yeah, because I want the Kraken to really hit. So Kraken is cut two on the album, right? Not three or four or five, two. You give the biggest contrast possible. And he's constantly painfully aware of the direction in which you're processing information and the dialogue between the game and the it's interesting because I feel like prose, the written language says like imagine this, imagine that, and film says look at this, look at this, look at this, and games say do this.
Right.
And
right, and he does all of them
trying to spur thought through activity is the whole trick of gaming and what makes it such an endlessly interesting medium. And he does that exactly. Like, he's just, it's just textbook. It's just, like I said, a masterclass.
But he does, but he uses
Papers, Please in a completely different direction.
I got to check that game out. He uses all of those aspects, though. Like, that's what I like. He really does have a mastery of all of those aspects. And I find that very impressive. Like, yeah, that's a guy whose mind I want to get into. I'd love him to come on this podcast. We can interview and find out how he puts together puzzles like this. Anyway, we don't want to be shills. So, but we love his work so much. Did this bring you any, not nostalgia, but sort of like, did it transport you back to the era at all? Thinking about the era?
Yes, of course. I recently shouted these out on this show, but I'm going to shout them out goddamn again because they're like $1.99 on Steam. And very similar look by Cyan, the company that makes the Myst and Riven games. Very early work by Cyan. One's called Spelunx with an X, S-P-E-L-U-N-X. And the other one's called Cosmic Osmo and the Worlds Beyond the Mackerel. Those are in this style, in this like dot pointillism style.
Yeah, the one bit. Yeah.
Brought all that stuff flooding back. Some of my early favorite games. And I mean early, like they are games for children. But if you're nostalgic for that look, yeah. Yeah, dude. Vector Supreme. You ever play that shit?
I haven't.
Cafe.
I actually meant the historical era, but I love that you said all that because I didn't get to play all this.
I thought you meant the look of the game. Yeah. The look of the game.
No, see, I didn't. Again, I was not a computer guy. I didn't have a PC or like a Mac.
It harkens to early Macintosh games. Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't have any of that, so I never played any of them. But I'd like to play any of them if they're at all like this. I'm like way into it. I was actually thinking like this game does a nice job of. Without too much fanfare, kind of highlighting the difficulties of that time period, you know, like in a really artfully done way. Like I really had to think hard about like the poor women that were on this like voyage and like what is this, what is that like, and just like realizing like oh, some of these people are maniacs and scumbags, and some of them are like noble people, like, and they're all sort of sleeping next to each other, and they're trapped in this little wooden boat. And, like, how would you even get out of this, right? And they have so many cool, like, the idea of, like, certain people trying to slip off with the artifact. Some people just trying to get out of there. Like, they're just like, you know what, man? We got to get out of here. Like, it's very human, you know? And I thought a lot about that when I was playing the game.
Yeah, it reminded me of Treasure Island. Reminded me a bit of Moby Dick. I love, you know?
A little, like, but it's less... It's less like Destiny, you know, like
well, there's no... The symbolic level is not trying to be there. But I'm saying just textually, more than anything, it reminds me of Deadwood at Sea. That really is it for me.
A little bit. It's funny because it's actually the opposite in some ways because Deadwood is so lyrical and verbal and this game's
not.
Well,
and Deadwood's about a society coming together. This is about a society falling apart.
Correct. Well, yes. Yes, you're right. But I do see the Deadwoodness of it because it's very ingrained in the everyday mundanity of it. Like that's, you know, like Deadwood's a very mundane show in a lot of ways.
And yet life is cheap. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and also just like it's about a gold claim that like may have some gold on it and the property rights and like the proper position of the saloon compared to the other saloon and like mercantile value. Like those kind of things are plot points, you know, stuff that's like, yeah, that would matter if I lived back then, but usually not the fodder for drama. There's a lot of that stuff in this game. You know, just going through people's sleeping arrangements and like where they had to stow. It's like, God, life at sea would have been awful. I'm so glad we don't have to do that now.
Right. Like you know? In some sense, if someone said in this game, you shoot aliens in the face. And I said, well, in this game, you find out who's this guy's brother. They might say, I'd rather play the first one.
You mean boring shit? I don't like to play boring shit.
Know, so it depends what your jam is, but I think it's a good game.
I honestly, like, I can't recommend it enough if, like, I think there's a whole industry that has not been fully explored of, like, great detective stuff. But I also, like, I love that in film. I love it in games.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't that many of them, man. I did a Google search after this, and, like, several of them, I'm like, what are the best detective games? And there's not very many.
FMV Sega CD game is good.
And also Her Story is a big one. There's a Sherlock Holmes called Crime and Punishment, apparently, that's a really good one. L.A. Noir pops up over and over. We've never talked about that.
What about the Cthulhu one, Sunken City or whatever? I actually thought that was decent.
Yeah. Meaning there's room for this. There's like we could have much, much more
regardless.
Of this.
Yes.
Yeah. Certainly. Yeah. It's under I think there's a whole sort of genre of like if we love true crime so much, why wouldn't we have more like true crime like puzzle based games? Right? Like that would be really interesting. I know this is like mythical crime, but I feel like
yeah.
That's
we could
a weird
base it on real
point.
Shit. We could squeeze even more money out of these dead freaks.
I know that is very cynical, and I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's an appetite
right, is really the point. Sure.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But thank you for pointing out how exploitative my idea is.
Hey,
you're right.
Speaking of squeezing more money out of these freaks, I think it's time for another
bodies?
Ad break. Do you agree? Yeah.
Yarr.
Let's follow our ghostwriter / Donnie Darko soul spear to this ad break.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ever see Ghost Rider? We're back, by the way. Not enough to get the reference.
No.
Ghost Rider was a living ghost that took the form of a white column of light that would write, that would like show you where to go.
Oh, sounds
you
like
know,
we could have used them at times. Yeah,
could have used them to navigate this shit. We're passing another checkpoint, which brings us to our final segment, matey. Which is, you see what I did there?
I do.
Which is, no, you don't, because you have an eye patch, because you're a pirate. Keep or delete, where we give a final thought so that it's not just a 2-minute segment and discuss why and whether this makes the Celestial hard drive, our drive of the 100 most important games of all time.
Yeah.
Or favorite or best. It depends when you ask us. We have different answers.
Yeah.
So we're considering Oberdin. Before we get down to the actual answer, I want to ask you, Adam, who would you consider MVP of the crew? And I only want to nominate two people, but feel free to give me a third answer if you think I missed someone.
Okay.
I would say it's either, but I can't decide. Captain Witterell, because of the John Wick shit that we've already discussed. Or Henry Evans, who somehow thought of the idea of tying a monkey to a rope like a yo-yo, slinging it into the room with the evidence in it, and shooting the monkey through the bars so that later an insurance adjuster with a magic stopwatch could relive the memory from the dead monkey's point of view and solve the crime.
Like, hard to argue
against that. The foresight, my God.
Hard to argue against that. Is he also the doctor that escapes?
He's the surgeon who goes
surgeon
to Africa.
Yeah. Well, I think, aside from that bit, the fact that he saved people's lives in this terrible ship
despite alone. The doom that yeah. abounds. Yeah.
Well, he did. I mean, it's very clear that somebody needed to stand up and save lives. And, like, I did like the captain's John Wick thing, but he was keeping these supernatural beings alive in the ship. So he did cause all those deaths, or some of right. those deaths. So that's on him.
Yeah, he was you know what I mean? Had captured mermaids and precious magic shells of some
yeah,
kind.
Yeah, and I see why. I mean, it's like, yeah, that's worth a lot of money. I could see why he wanted to do it.
Right.
But it was pretty clear, like, it was killing everybody. Right? Yeah.
That's you know? True. Like, the mutiny was not uncalled for. They had lost no. 60% of the crew already.
They just had a Cthulhu ripping a no, man I love- in half. Can I keep... I can't say it enough. Ripping him in half.
The
awful.
Mutiny is essentially like, so... There's like four of us left. Should we mutiny?
What else is there? Yar.
Yeah, what else is there? Yar. That's all we can do.
That's basically it. That's all we can dar.
And then he sends you the monkey's paw, like the fucking yep. SD card in a security camera. He's
yes,
like,
he does.
This will work. This will display the information you need.
He's a
Amazing.
Smart fucking guy. You
smart
know?
Doctor. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got, you know, the magic sight. He was definitely right. the smartest person on the ship, that's for sure. Anyway, please,
well,
let's wrap this
I'm
up.
I'm
going right?
to assume since you were sick of walking around and backtracking again and again to see all these dead bodies' memories, you're a big old delete, right?
Oh, absolutely not. 100% not.
Oh,
no,
a double
this,
delete. Jeez.
No, this is a game that I have to keep. Absolutely have to keep. I found it so imaginative and unlike anything I'd ever played. Great new mechanics, great story. Like, this is exactly the kind of stuff I want to enshrine on the Celestial Hard Drive, right alongside the great AAA games that we all remember and love. Like, this one absolutely belongs.
And you found it fun moment to moment, because I know that's key
fun.
For you.
It okay, was super
that's,
fun.
Yeah, just to make sure I track and understand your
right.
system.
Why would I do this? Yeah, no, I thought it was really fun. And it Good. Didn't, it, with the exception of that one problem, it really didn't get in its own way very much. You know, it's like pretty.
No, it's not
pretty
a
easy
lopsided
to play.
Game. It just yeah. you're just talking about a quality of life improvement that would have been nice. It's nothing.
It
yeah.
would have, yeah, it would have shaved about an hour of time off.
That's right.
You know, maybe a little more once it was like really easy to jump back and forth. Like I, mm-hmm. but maybe an hour of the runtime could have been shaved that way.
I Otherwise, think it's doubly good. Impressive that this makes it through with an Atom Keep to an Atom Keep. Given that it's not been long enough to, I wouldn't say enough stuff has ripped this off yet for it to be of historical import per se.
But it should be. It absolutely
but it should
be.
Yeah, like you're calling a shot of like, this is just good shit.
I
and
am.
I'm really happy to hear that you felt that way. Because I will also keep it. I think it's a phenomenal game. One of my favorites of all time, in
Me
fact.
Too.
Yeah, super, super cool. I guess that's that, Mattress Man.
One of a kind. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I've never played another game like it. So, and this was released in 2018.
The closest experience I've ever had to it is those puzzles, which I loved as a kid, where you would do word problems, if people remember these, that were like, Susie's birthday is after the person who's twice as tall as George.
Right, like the SATs.
And Jenny's dress is as red as the person who has... three Georges. How many Georges are left? You know what I mean? Those, and yeah. you'd fill in that logic grid of like, this person's taller than this person, therefore they're wearing red, therefore yeah. they need to go to the doctor at three or whatever the grid was. And that's all I can, if you liked those puzzles, this is like a four-dimensionally gamified extrapolation of that experience.
Did you ever take the GRE?
No.
Okay, GRE is like SAT for grad school.
Right.
It has a lot of logic puzzles that are similar to what you're talking about. Like, that's like one mm-hmm. of the main forms of it. And they are kind of fun. Like, if you take the pressure of the GRE or the SAT
yeah,
away,
absolutely.
They're fun. Like, they're you know, and I think this game is for somebody who really likes that. Like, if some guys, if you're like a, like, your favorite game of the year is Madden or a Call of Duty, this probably isn't going to move you much.
Yeah. Speaking of which, neither of us have mentioned, which we should, because this is the part Lucas obviously didn't do all himself, especially for a small, small game, some of the finest voice acting in gaming
really
history.
Really good voice acting. Yes.
Yeah, across the board. Sorry.
Yeah.
Continue.
Well, and just to be fair, it's not the same as like a single performance in Horizon Forbidden West. You know what I mean?
No, because like, that's so monumental. But it's just the idea of calling your shot where the game is so reliant on sound. They are the clues. They are the conveyance of the story. Your actors cannot be flat, and they're not. They're all very naturalistic.
But I also think that's a function of a smart designer who didn't ask that much of the actors. You know what I mean? Like you're right. You're absolutely right. The sound is very visceral and real, and well performed. But also, I think this guy's really smart because he didn't set out. He wasn't writing Deadwood, you know what I mean? Where they have to be amazing, which that's why I'm saying the Horizon Forbidden West thing, where like that really leaned on acting, and there was a lot of it, and it worked. Like they were great. This is much more contained and
fine. You're right. Delete it.
Yeah. Delete the game. No, I was surprised we both kept this. I kind of got the feeling like maybe you wouldn't keep it. So I'm glad you like it as
wouldn't
much as I do.
Wouldn't keep Obra Dinn?
Yeah, you didn't seem that excited about it when we were talking about it.
So really? I did a whole long video at IGN. One of the first things I did was Obra Dinn is one of the best games of all time. You should play it.
I didn't watch that. I'm sorry. I missed
called
that.
Called The video. Return of the Return of Obra Dinn. Check it out.
Yeah, they could
and
do
that's
a
our
fucking
plug segment.
They could do a series on it. Like, they could keep making these games. Like, all of them, they're the insurance company, and they're just solving. Like, I would play this game 10 times easily.
Oh, I would play this again in a factory where that burned down. I would play this again in a field that got bombed. Yeah, for sure.
They could make so many of these, and I'd be thrilled. I am going to play one of those Sherlock Holmes games that I've read is really good. Mm-hmm. It's called Crimes and Punishment. I'm going to play it. I haven't. But I have such an itch now for a cool detective game. So,
well,
thanks, Lucas
Pope.
Well,
if anyone has cool detective games that are truly great, at me so I can pretend I thought of them and tell Adam.
You
but
love
if you're
that.
Looking for us and our friends in various combinations hosting podcasts on a wide variety of subjects, we hope you'll look us up wherever you get podcasts at Small Beans or by heading over to Patreon. You know the rest. I lost it.
That's okay.
Otherwise, if you only care about video games, just stay subbed to One Upsmanship and we'll be back almost each and every week with another video game discussion.
That's right. We are out here hitting the game minds hard, bringing you this sweet, sweet gold. We love
you. Play one in a mine.
I would too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Layers of mining, you know, like, and it's like, what are they digging up? Who knows? We'll find out.
Work complete.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.